And I know this lifestyle doesn't really feed me. I just tune out to the voice inside the speaking.
It is The Blitz, 2:30 to 4, Monday to Friday, here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you, joining us as he hops on every week. We're always appreciative and thankful for his time. Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune, our guest, has his own podcast network. You can find it at MNSPN.com. This segment, as always, is brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. Talking Vikings, Wolves today. Let's start with the purple and gold, Jim. Sam Bradford put on IR this week to open up a spot for Teddy Bridgewater. There's a lot of layers to peel back with this, so let's start with Bradford. I just feel bad for this dude. I honestly think he could have led this team to an NFC North crown this year, and we saw how good it could be week one, and then it all just gets ripped away from him. It's hard from a human element to just not feel genuinely bad for this guy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really two different stories. From the financial standpoint, he has, you know, he was like the last number one pick to just benefit from the old system and make an incredible amount of money before he ever proved himself. So the man, you know, from a financial standpoint, the man's set for life. He's done incredibly well for himself. From the human and competitor standpoint, I agree with you completely. I feel bad for him. I think he's a really good competitor. I think he's a really good quarterback. I think he was at a career peak in a perfect offense for him. I think he was going to have a massive year. I think this team could have won 11 or 12 games with him at quarterback. And, you know, who knows? Maybe he would have been starting at U.S. Bank Stadium in February. And instead, we don't know if he's going to have a career. And as you said, from the human element and from the competitor standpoint, I feel really bad for the guy.
I know this is near impossible to answer, but I just wanted to ask you anyways, like, what now for Sam Bradford? I'm guessing he doesn't play another down for the Vikings, but is it possible another team could give him a contract, dare I even say a hefty contract, if he proves to be good to go by next year?
I just have trouble believing that people are going to invest in him. Now, I think somebody will give him a chance, but will they invest heavily in him? I don't think so. Not when, you know, with really no major hit, he can't play after week one. When he does go out there, he can barely stand up. I just can't imagine anybody giving him a big contract. I think somebody's going to give him a fairly low-ball contract and bring him in as a second or third quarterback and see what he's got. Now, maybe I'm wrong. There's so many teams that need quarterbacks, but, that knee scares the heck out of me.
We mentioned with him going on IR, it opened up a spot for Teddy, who gets put on the active roster, Jim. He'll back up Case Keenum this weekend in Washington. Mike Zimmer said earlier this week the plan is to only have two active quarterbacks for Sunday, of course they being Case and Teddy, which kind of told me and tells us they must be perfectly fine playing Bridgewater if need be, right? Otherwise you wouldn't carry just two. If there was any shred of doubt in your mind that Teddy wasn't completely ready, you probably carry three quarterbacks if something happened to Keenum. Now that they're going with two, it kind of leaves no doubt.
That is exactly right, and the question is not whether Teddy can play in a game. The question is, when is the right time for them to break him in? I think, you know, I'm much more of a Teddy guy than a Case guy. I think Teddy has a chance to be a very good NFL quarterback. I think Case is better than I thought he'd be. He has elevated himself from the status of okay backup to good or very good backup, but that's different than being a franchise quarterback. I think they have every reason to play Bridgewater once they think the time is right. The question is, when's the time right? Do you break him in a blowout? Do you just give him another week to really acclimate? Do you wait until Case benches himself, basically, which could happen? I mean, the thing is, Case has beaten five bad teams, five struggling or bad quarterbacks. The only game this team has won against a good team, what we now know is a good team, was opening night when Bradford beat the Saints. You know, even though they're 6-2 and even though people are excited about the winning, I'm not sure Keenum is going to survive this stretch, and I think the Vikings deep in their hearts know that and are prepared to put Bridgewater in at the first sign of trouble.
And that stretch you're talking about, it's Washington, then L.A., and then three straight on the road against Detroit, Atlanta, Carolina. Like, the second half is it looks pretty brutal for the Vikings. And on the flip side, you got the Lions, who have one of the most lenient schedules according to teams and what their records are at. How stunned would you be knowing all of what we know now, and there's still certainly some murkiness, some gray area, but how stunned would Jim Suhan be if we didn't see Teddy Bridgewater start some games this year?
Oh, I'd be shocked at this point. In fact, I think the target date might be. I mean, let's face it, they don't need to go 5-0 during the stretch. They might even be able to get away with going 2-3, but they probably got to go 2-3. And if you would pick one game in this 5-game stretch that they have to win, it would be at Detroit on Thanksgiving. So to me, that's the most interesting date. You know, if you really think Teddy's the better quarterback, and if you think he's ready to play, you want him to play on Thanksgiving in Detroit. And if you want Teddy to play on Thanksgiving, do you really bring him back on a short week, or do you play him the week before against Los Angeles in a home game? So, you know, the timing's going to be fascinating. I can't predict what they're going to do, but I would almost think that if Keenum isn't lights out in Washington, then I make the move to Teddy.
Always enjoy his time with us on the program. He is Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune. Find his podcast network at MNSPN.com. This segment is always brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. Mike Zimmer said something else, amongst many things, at his presser earlier this week, and I believe he phrased this as a week-by-week situation with Teddy, with Case Keenum, and how it could unfold. I'm wondering, Jim, are you taking him at his word? Because this is such a weird scenario that I'm almost by default just taking Mike Zimmer's word for it.
Yeah, I think, and it was interesting. You know, Mike can be really ornery. He can really hate injury questions. He can hate quarterback questions. He can hate anything he thinks is an obvious or controversial type subject. He was really good this week. You know, he showed a lot of empathy and sympathy for Bradford. He said he appreciates Keenum, and he should. And you can tell just what he talks about, how much he loves Teddy Bridgewater and wants Teddy to be his quarterback. So I actually, this week is a week where I would take Mike Zimmer at his word, and I don't say that very often.
How much does Teddy's contract situation and the potential for him to be a free agent factor into all of this? Because don't the Vikings at some point, like, they need to know what they have going forward, but at the same time, they got to make sure they ready themselves for the now with where they sit at, which is 6-2 atop the NFC North.
I think it would be more difficult if, you know, like Case Keenum had a chance of being their franchise quarterback and you're choosing between two franchise quarterbacks. And like I said, I think they think internally that Teddy is the better quarterback. He's the better quarterback now. He's the better quarterback going forward. He's the better choice to lead your franchise. So, really, to me, it's all about timing more than anything else. I think they think that Teddy Bridgewater can be their guy for the next 5 years. So, I think that simplifies the decision. It's not like they're being tortured by the decision. They're being tortured just by the timing of when he plays.
Mike Zimmer was asked as well this week. I know I keep diving into his sound bites, but I found them to be fascinating at his press conference this week. He was asked if, after he named Case Keenum the starter officially, if there was any chance we see Teddy this Sunday in Washington, and he said anything's possible and that everything's kind of on the table. Do you think there's any chance that he would try to sneak Teddy in for just a couple of drives? I'm never down with that vibe, but if the Vikings were to keep winning and Case is playing even just above average, I think it'd be hard to pull the plug or know when to pull the plug on that blueprint.
And that is the great variable here. What if Case keeps playing great, and what if he starts beating good teams and good quarterbacks? I don't know what you do. I guess everything I've said is based on my expectation that Case is going to have a bad game, or he's going to look not quite up to the challenge. If he keeps winning, then I think you keep playing him, and maybe you do sneak Bridgewater in. I wouldn't sneak Bridgewater in the middle of a game. I'd look for a blowout situation, or I guess you would call it these days a low leverage situation. But that is the most interesting variable here: is what if Case keeps winning, and is a reason they're winning, not just a guy who's being carried? Then I don't know if he can make the move.
How are you feeling about the Vikings' chances this Sunday against Washington, the matchup itself? I'm so indifferent on what they are. One week they look all right. The next week they look great, and they win in Seattle. The games they've lost as they sit at 4-4 aren't to bad teams. I know they've lost to Philadelphia twice. They edge out the Niners. But again, then last week, right when I'm like, Washington might kind of sink into irrelevancy, they go on the road and beat Seattle. So I have no idea what to make of them.
Well, it's really two opposite situations. The Vikings are 6-2 in part because of a really easy schedule, and Washington is 4-4 in part because of the toughest schedule so far in the NFL. They have to be disappointed the way their receivers have played. Jordan Reed's been injured. The defense is not good statistically, and yet they have people who can make plays. They have a quarterback who can light it up any given week. They have a defensive front that can cause problems. To me, this is one of those games that gets decided by, how Keenum plays and whether when Everson Griffin or Danielle Hunter get near Kirk Cousins, whether it turns into a strip sack or just a sack or whether they miss him. I mean, so many of these games really are decided on that moment where you got a chance to create a turnover and you either do or you don't.
You can find a lot of his work in the Star Tribune. Podcast network is at MNSPN.com. Jim Suhan, our guest this afternoon here on the Blitz, brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. Let's bounce over to the Timberwolves. 5-game win streak was snapped on Wednesday against Golden State. That game in particular, Jim, I don't know. I'm not worried about Minnesota now. It didn't tell me much of anything. I took more away from a Golden State perspective. They've won 14 games in a row that Kevin Durant hasn't played in. He suffered that injury last year in Washington and missed a significant chunk of the season, and they've won 14 in a row when he hasn't been on the court. And I don't know how it keeps happening, but every time I watch Golden State, they seem to impress me more and more.
It's a historically great team, and they're great with Durant. They're great without Durant. Obviously, Durant gives them an even higher ceiling and played great last year in the postseason and is an excellent defender as well as one of the great offensive players in the game. But they're also fine without him. And, the Wolves are not there yet. They are much better. I think they're going to be a really good team. I think they're going to be a blast to watch. But they're not up on that level yet, and not many teams are. And they just don't play with, they're not – the Warriors knew how to make things difficult on them. And they're not to the point yet in playing together where they can overcome that yet against a great team. They're gonna win a lot of games, I think. I think it's a really good team, but there just isn't that innate offensive cohesiveness and flow that you need on offense, and the defense is still a work in progress.
Halftime, it was a one-point game, and then the Warriors, and it felt like a real feel-out process by both sides. It kind of seemed like Minnesota was seeing what Golden State was going to throw their way, and Tom Thibodeau's club did a good job of responding with their own counterpunches back through 24 minutes. Golden State leads 51-50 at halftime, and then they decide to lay down a 44 spot in the third quarter. And when you get behind 15 or more against this team, this Golden State squad, all I can say is good luck. And in the NBA, Jim, I'm constantly shaking my head at how quickly a team can make up a deficit of 12 or more points, and they can do it in the flip of a switch. But against the Warriors, I don't care if it's Minnesota, San Antonio, Houston, you're out of luck most times, aren't you?
Well, yeah, and really where I thought the game was lost, and I'm not sure they would have won anyway, but where it turned into a blowout, I thought the Wolves in the first half, the Warriors weren't cooking, the Warriors are a little sloppy. The Wolves had a lot of open shots. The Wolves had a lot of open threes, and they missed a lot of them. And so the score said, hey, they're playing great. They're playing with the Warriors. I actually didn't think they played great in the first half. I thought they left a lot on the table. I think they should have scored 60, 65 points, and had they done that, then maybe they have a chance when the Warriors make their run, which you knew the Warriors were going to. So I just think against the Warriors, you're going to, just because of the pace of play, the Warriors are an excellent defensive team, but just because of the pace of play, you're going to get open shots. And you got to hit them, because if you make them, then you're being rewarded with the points. You're also slowing the pace of play a little bit. You're making them take the ball out of the basket. You miss open shots against that team, it's going to come back and get you.
I thought Andrew Wiggins played really well, and the stats may not shine in such a way. 17 points, I think he had 6 rebounds, but he was active. He was grabbing boards and being in the neighborhood of some that he didn't get underneath the hoop. Could Jimmy Butler perhaps already be rubbing off onto Andrew Wiggins?
I think so, but the one thing, though, Andrew, in his career, his problem has not been getting up for big games. This is a guy who's played really well against LeBron James. His problem has been the average Tuesday night in February, whether he wants to rebound or not, whether he does the extra things, whether he shows some fire. So I'm not surprised that Wiggins looked like he belonged, but that doesn't surprise me. The challenge for me for Wiggins is, he's such a quiet, reserved guy. It's getting him fired up for the Tuesday in November against the Kings.
We'll finish up with a couple of points. I tell you, Jim Suhan, the Wolves can be 7-4 through 11 games this year. I don't give you circumstance, who they beat, or anything like that. I just say you can sign up for 7-4 through this relatively small chunk of an 11-game sample. Do you sign up for it?
I take 7-4. I especially take 7-4 if you tell me that they're going to miss, that Butler's going to be out for 2 games and they're going to get killed in those 2 games. This team is 7-2 when Butler plays. I think that tells you everything you need to know about this roster. And the good thing is that Butler is that valuable. The bad thing is that they really are dependent on having a veteran who knows how to play because, you know, Cat and Wiggins, they're still figuring stuff out.
We'll leave on this. Is it even a little bit baffling to you that, like, with all the new pieces, Jim, three new starters on offense with Teague and Butler and Gibson, I thought it would take that side more time to get the chemistry down. And certainly, as you said, it's still a work in progress. They're still working on the cohesion. But compared to the defense, the offense has been, like, leaps and bounds better for Minnesota. Is it a little head-scratching that the defense has been lacking so much?
It is. And, you know, one thing about Tibbs, he built his defensive reputation when he had Garnett in Boston and we had Joakim Noah in Chicago. And he doesn't really have an eraser right now. He doesn't have a great internal defender. Taj will give you effort. Karl-Anthony Towns is capable of it, but hasn't really figured it out yet. And until he has somebody who can kind of just be his backstop, be his goalie, it's not that he's not a good defensive coach. He's a very good defensive coach. But until he can develop an interior presence that really kind of backs up, you know, the exterior pressure that he wants, this team's not going to be a great defending team.
Find his work, Star Tribune, Podcast Network, MNSPN.com. Jim, as always, it's a pleasure.
Hey, thanks, Mitch.
Cal Soderquist is the assistant producer for the Minnesota Timberwolves Radio Network. He also has a large role in the Timberwolves Entertainment Network. He joins us next talking, you guessed it, Minnesota Timberwolves basketball.